Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
But we see a breakthrough this week in baseball. Has damage already been done? Joining us here on the show is longtime baseball columnist. He works for Newsday, David Lennon. David, good to have you back on the show. How are you?
Hey, Damon. I'm doing okay. Thank you.
I appreciate you joining us. And let's start with your read on the situation. We've always known that the union and the owners have been at each other's throats for really generations now. Did you foresee this being a fight when we got shut down for baseball and then there was talk of reopening it?
I didn't. Only because, Damon, I know people know this fact now because we've mentioned it numerous times, but you know, when the two sides were able to strike that March 26th agreement, which you remember came right before when opening day would have been, you know, they settled some pretty big issues. You know, they took care of the service time problem by giving the players a full year's credit, even if a season wasn't played. And they also gave them an advance on their salaries. I think it was $170 million in advance that actually expired this month on May 24th. So we thought they were able to take care of a lot of issues then. What we came to learn, however, was the few lines in there that dealt with the quote-unquote economic feasibility of the game and also what the players would be compensated. It seemed like those two matters were very much up in the air, and that's where it leaves us right now.
Does it seem like to you that the owners are opportunists here, that they're taking advantage of this situation to try to restructure, recalibrate baseball's economics long term?
No, I don't see that. I think what both sides are trying to do right now is just really get the sport on the field for 2020. Sure. If they did open up a lot of salary structure and decided to look at CBA issues a year from now, they could do that. I don't think they need to go quite that far just to get the sport played. Because once you start, you know, we saw what happened when the revenue sharing idea came up and how irate the union came over that. And they weren't too pleased either last week when they came up with the sliding pay scale reduction plan. So, you know, David, when they get these CBAs done or when they work on these CBAs, you know, they're in place for 3 to 5 years or so, it takes months and months to solve those issues that become quite contentious. So right now, to think you could get matters that big decided in the span of a week or two is pretty ambitious. I think right now they really have to narrow that focus and figure out a plan that will work just to get a half season in and the playoffs in, hopefully.
David Lennon joins us from Newsday to talk about the current battle within Major League Baseball. So there's a sentiment amongst a lot of people that if they don't play baseball, it's going to be catastrophic for them. And everybody that remembers baseball prior to the strike knows that the relevance of the World Series, the All-Star game of the sport itself, was just massive before the strike, and then after the strike, it kind of eroded. Do you think the same type of break would happen here, or is that kind of overreactionary just because we're in the moment?
I think there is a little bit of that overreaction, Damon. You make a good point there, but I think the concern is real. I mean, we've talked a lot about baseball slipping in the marketplace recently. We've talked about slipping attendance. That's a very real thing. We've talked about the slipping TV ratings for the World Series. These are all real statistics. And the sports marketplace, or I should say the entertainment marketplace, is extremely crowded. You know, you've seen the rise of the NFL, you've seen the rise of the NBA in popularity, and then you just talk into numerous, you know, different things, whether it's UFC, whether it's different streaming services, you name it. Talk about esports. There's a lot of other comers here in the market that baseball is always guarding against. Baseball has its place, and you know, the national pastime, that's debatable, you know, especially with the rise of the NFL, but there is a danger. You don't want to lose whatever market share you do have. And in this climate and the way things are going, I think that's a legit fear. I think people who are hardcore baseball fans will remain baseball fans. But from a paying customer standpoint, you never want to give your customers an opportunity to spend their dollars somewhere else. And if you step away and wind up on the sidelines while these other sports come back, you know, I think you will lose some people.
You wrote a really interesting piece this weekend about if it's a reality, if there really could be no baseball this year. And you spoke to some people that said, this might not be just posturing. This might be no baseball. Why would there be the cynicism that they could actually get a deal done here to get this sport back in play?
The people that you mentioned, Damon, were, you know, are baseball economists, really. The people who study the sport, who've written a lot about the economics of it and labor relations. And, you know, what was explained is that, you know, this is a numbers thing. I mean, the losses here are real. You know, when you talk about owners who would rather just not play the games, you know, to prevent further losses, that's real. You know, when you talk about the players demanding they want to get, they feel like they've given up enough of a pay cut already and losing half of their salaries for this season, that's real. So, you know, as far as finding a middle ground, that's what makes it extremely difficult. Somebody is going to have to give significantly to make this happen. And the other part of it is when you've had these labor problems in the past, yeah, they've been on principle. They've been on fundamental things like staying away from revenue sharing from the player's standpoint and a lot of salary structure stuff. But we've never seen the sport affected by an outside force like we're seeing with this pandemic and the complete shutdown of a lot of the economic factors here. So that's why people look at it and can see a percentage chance that, yeah, I mean, baseball might just decide on both sides that it's not worth it to them financially to come back. You know, baseball fandom and society at large doesn't want to hear it, but it is a business, and if these people want to make a cold, hard business decision, one can be made here.
David Lennon, Newsday, joins us here on the show, longtime baseball writer and columnist. Is any of this friction that we see now fall on the shoulders of Rob Manfred and a lack of leadership there?
I wouldn't say that necessarily. I think these are very difficult things to bridge. You know, we've seen traditionally between the union and between the owners, there's just a lot of mistrust there. You know, with the owners, they have a lot of different revenue streams. You know, there's ballpark villages, there's, you know, your TV networks. There's so many different ways for teams to make money now. And the players who believe they're deserving of a lot, maybe more of that pie, you know, are skeptical about how much money these owners are definitely making. Are they hiding the revenues from them? Are they being honest about that? And I think that's where more of the mistrust comes here. I mean, when you look at Rob Manfred, you talk about leadership. Any commissioner, Damon, is really run by the ownership of the sport. You know, you're talking about 30 owners here. They all have differing opinions. They all have factions. They all have business interests in how this game is done. And those are the driving forces here. I mean, sure, Manfred's job is to consolidate that and try to broker these kind of deals. But, you know, the people that are running these leagues are the people that own the teams. And I think that's why it becomes so difficult to get deals done in these situations.
We recently had Tom Glavine on the show, and Glavine was a very vocal face of the strike in 94. And I asked him if he had any regrets from that time. He said, my regret would be that I did too many interviews. He said, I thought by speaking openly and publicly, I could change people's opinions. I couldn't, and I became the face of the strike, and it really hurt me in a lot of people's eyes for a long time. We have other players that are pretty vocal right now. Blake Snell has caught a lot of flack. Trevor Bauer, obviously, as well, and some others. Do you think it's a mistake for these players to be going through the media or their own social media channels and trying to explain why they wouldn't play Max Scherzer among them? Is there more damage that can be done there than good in trying to sway people's opinions?
It's a tough situation for the players, Damon. I know they have to feel boxed in right now just because, listen, the way things are going right now with 30 million people out of work, and players are obviously are well-to-do. They make a lot of money. But, you know, this is their livelihood. This is their careers. They are arguing about how their careers should go from here. You know, they don't want to be taken advantage of by the owner's side, which, again, are billionaires on that side. So I think what they feel like in speaking out is because they feel like they're kind of, like I mentioned, they just feel like they don't have an avenue to explain it. Now, my problem with it, and I also wrote about this not too long ago, Damon, is that I think you have to be careful because in the environment right now with dealing with the pandemic, clearly, and like I mentioned, whether it's the people out of work, whether it's people sick, whether it's people dying, family members, friends, I just think you need kind of a level of diplomacy here. Again, I don't blame the players for wanting to get their side out, and they have a lot of issues that are legitimate, of course. But I think if you want to get people on your side or you want to, you know, get something among the fan base like that, it's important to be more diplomatic. You've seen the owners do that, but again, the owners don't have Twitter accounts or Instagram accounts and just go on blast on those. The players do, and I think at times you can run into trouble, I think, as Blake Snell did.
Is there a distrust of Scott Boras that Trevor Bauer alluded to because Boras represents some of the highest paid players in the sport and also has been pretty vocal about what he thinks the union should or should not do?
Well, listen, I mean, when you're talking about the union, you're talking about, of course, it is run by the players. It's made up of the players. But the agents are very powerful people in that because they represent the players. They have opinions. They have agendas, how they think things should go for the players. And Boras is the most powerful agent there. You know, he's very smart. He's very tuned in to how the industry goes. But he's also, if you've talked to him, he has a lot of very strong opinions. And he's unwavering in those. And that doesn't work as well all the time when you're trying to broker deals. You know, Boras is more of a guy that pushes ideas for himself. He's in business for himself. Of course, he has players as clients, but he has an idea of how his business should be run and what works best. And if he tries to get too many of those ideas in a group situation, and when you're trying to negotiate with a side that really Boras has been at war with a lot with the owners, that could be problematic. And I think that's where you saw Bauer speaking out about.
David Lennon joins us from Newsday. So I just want to talk timeline with you because we had heard opening day, maybe July 1, maybe July 4th weekend. We are now going to hit June 1 tomorrow. That gives us a month. We would assume there have to be at least a week, probably 2 weeks of a spring training run-up, which would mean that sometime in 2 weeks, we're starting to talk about spring training or getting undergoing with spring training 2.0. Is there a drop-dead date in your mind that they've got to come to a conclusion or an agreement or there just can't be baseball this year?
Damon, I remember talking to people very early in this process. When I say early, I'm talking more about, you know, later in April. And they always told me that, you know, we have to get a season started around the start of July. You know, we don't want to start a season in August because we don't want to play that deep into November. So that's really the time frame we have to look at. Now, as we're getting later into this, and they're so far apart in the deal, now you start to hear things like, well, you know, we can get a deal done maybe mid-June, later in June. Maybe we can start a season later in July, possibly August. And I'm like, well, now it's becoming contingent on the fact that you can't get a labor agreement in place, not so much what's best in staging a season. Listen, I think you have to try to start a season around July 4th, and that's what they wanted to do. But that's going to start to become impossible if you can't get a deal in place, you know, certainly within this week. And if you go much beyond that, it's going to push it deeper into July. So where they are right now, if a deal is going to happen, and I am still optimistic about it, despite the problems we've seen, I still think they'll come to an agreement here and manage to get the sport going again. But I think this week, again, is needs to be a big one. We talked about last week was supposed to be a big week. We saw what happened. Not much productive. So I think they have to get going again and get some momentum this week, because we can't get too much later in June without having a good part of the season in place. Because, Damon, this is all unprecedented territory. You know, we talk about getting the season going on paper with the health and safety protocols. You know, they can put together a schedule, a regional schedule that will seem to work, but they still have to get everybody, you know, down to Florida and Arizona for spring training, or if it's going to be up at their home ballpark, then they still have to get a spring training going without problems. So there's a lot of moving pieces here and a lot of work that still needs to be done. And the fact that we're spending so much time just to get an agreement done is problematic.
Yeah, well put. Great clarification from David Lennon of Newsday. I highly encourage you to follow him on Twitter at DP Lennon for his latest thoughts on the labor stoppage and if they can get this thing going and if we get baseball back. And also his piece this weekend for Newsday has been awesome. So check it out if you want to see kind of the inside track of what's going on with baseball's labor negotiations. And that is at newsday.com. David, it's always great to catch up with you, man. Thanks so much for doing it today.
Thanks for having me, David, and be well.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.